morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world. Welcome to Developpod from the Teacher Development Special Interest Group of IATEFL. And welcome to our new series of Developpod podcasts on the theme of the future of teacher development, where we'll be exploring current and likely future trends in English language teacher development. Now, I'd like to make a proviso that, at least personally speaking, I won't be holding to account any of the crystal ball predictions of our speakers. Well, I'm excited to say that, first of all, we're about to hear from Dr. Gabriel Diaz-Maggioli, who is the current president of IATEFL, and in his working capacity day-to-day, he's the Asesor Académico at Centro de Actualización en la Enseñanza Superior at the Universidad ORT in Montevideo, Uruguay. At the same place, I believe, he is also the Coordinador de la Diploma de Especialización en Enseñanza de Inglés como Lengua Extranjera. So, if you don't speak Spanish, then, well, forgive my accent, first of all, but I believe he's the Academic Advisor at the ORT University in Montevideo, Uruguay, and also the coordinator of the Diploma in Teaching of English as a Foreign Language at the same institution. Now, Dr. Gabriel Diaz-Maggioli, also known as Gabo more familiarly, is the author of many well-known publications, including the book Teacher-Centered Professional Development, 2004, and Teaching Language Teachers, Scaffolding Professional Learning, 2012. More lately, his publications include the one he mentions in the podcast, in fact, called Ignoramuses and Sages, Using Freirean Principles to Co-Construct Socially Just Teacher Education Practices, and A Framework to Enable Language Teacher Learning, which is an English language teacher education in changing times by Bloomsbury, which is forthcoming. So without further ado, I'll let Gabo introduce himself a little more. Over to the podcast. Enjoy. So welcome to Gabo, Dr. Gabriel Diaz-Maggioli. Thank you so much for joining us, Gabo.
Thank you for having me.
So you're going to give us a broad sweep, if you like, of teacher development, where we're at, and teacher development in the future. So first of all, with that in mind, what's your background and particular interest within English language teacher development?
I think it stems, like most things that happen to us professionally, from a personal need. Growing up in the profession in an underdeveloped country where there were not many opportunities for professional development, and always inquiring how I can serve my students better. And that is what got me started. How can I refine the things that I do in the classroom so that I can help my students better?
Great. And at the moment, what would you say is your particular interest within that field of teacher development?
Well, I work a lot with in-service and pre-service teachers. And that has led me to try and develop ways in which I can help them become more autonomous professionals and to own their learning, their professional learning. Particularly coming from a part of the world where a lot of the teacher training and development activities are kind of top-down instead of bottom-up, mandated by national educational systems or run by contracted experts who have no sense of what is going on in the teachers' classrooms.
I believe you have particular interest, as well as that kind of teacher-centered development, in Freirean ideas around social justice and so forth.
Absolutely.
We may well touch on that today. Mm-hmm. So let's kickstart things a little bit more specifically. In your opinion, in what ways has teacher development changed in the last few years?
Well, my opinion is that it hasn't changed much. Mm-hmm. And I thought that the pandemic was going to be the kind of leverage moment where things would start happening. But unfortunately, it hasn't. I understand that when you are undertaking a major curriculum review or a national educational reform, you need to provide some sort of standardized guidance for teachers. But we know from research, and we've known it for the past half a century, that this kind of mandated top down, here comes the expert, tells me what to do in my classroom tomorrow, kind of professional development does not help. It was great when technology started being used for professional development to see how teachers naturally migrated to the online environment to build their own personal learning networks. But what happens with those networks is that they are not recognized as, let's say, professional development, because there are no entities that guarantee any standards. However, it's perhaps one of the most powerful ways in which teachers can grow. I always use as an example the conversations in the staff room, the ad hoc mentoring relationships that happen among staff, as being some of the most readily visible proofs that teachers working together, solving their own quandaries of professional questions, is the way to go. However, I don't see this extended approach as being taken into consideration institutionally. Yes, it does at the level of personal professional development.
Yeah. As you say, they're very rarely certifiable or validated by management. Yeah. Okay. I'd like to ask another question and dig a little bit deeper there. You say things haven't changed very much, but in terms of online learning, would you not say that that's really been revolutionized and has changed what we need to do as teachers and seek in terms of teacher development?
It's quite a complex thing to breach, that one, because on the one hand, we know that what happened during the pandemic was not professional development. Even though we learned, and we learned based on our needs, this is the paradox. We did not learn for the fulfillment of our own personal needs. We were just solving problems of praxis, right? Problems that came up because of the pandemic. So the residue of that professional learning has not managed to change or significantly alter teachers' mindset about what it means to reach and teach all learners. This is my personal perspective, but what I've seen, and I've been doing quite a bit of research in the area, particularly in the university where I work, is that teachers, yes, they welcome technology, they applied everything else, but then once we went back to face-to-face teaching, most of the value of what we had learned, like, for example, the new conceptualizations of assessment, the incorporation of assessment as learning on a regular basis, that trickled away and people just had gone back to the way things used to be, when actually neither the students nor themselves are the same they were prior to the pandemic. So somehow we're living a pedagogical mirage in that sense, where there are lots of good ideas that happened during the pandemic that we could be using nowadays that we have to keep reminding people of, and they have not become part of their own repertoire.
It's fascinating, yeah. Personally, I would say that some people have continued as online teachers. I certainly have, and I've kept those techniques and the knowledge of materials and platforms, and I've used those, but I've brought those into my teaching to a large extent, those kind of technological-based platforms and apps, and I use them to some extent, maybe not quite so much when I teach face-to-face, but I still use them to some extent, and I think the students expect them. Interestingly, I also think going back teaching face-to-face, which I've also done, I've forgotten some of the old techniques and games and materials that I used to use.
You're right. Yeah.
So I need to relearn some of those things. So what themes do you currently see in teacher development?
I think one of the main drives for teacher development nowadays, and again, this might be the product of globalization, is the need to pursue professional development that can be certified, moving from your initial teacher education qualification to some sort of graduate diploma or master's or doctorate degree. And I don't think that necessarily is very effective professional development, because you may learn a lot of theory, but if that does not have a foothold in the classroom and you're able to practice the theory so that you can theorize your own practice, right, and build your own grounded theory, then you are just acquiring a qualification. You are not actually pursuing professional development. So that's the main drive that I see. And I'm speaking from the global south in the west, that is to say, Latin America mostly. But most countries in my region have this mandated teaching of English starting from very young ages. They are exploring all sorts of ways of providing English language instruction in the belief that if you have a bilingual, in that sense, English and whatever language is the national or official language in our country's population, then you can join the cadre of developed nations. And we know that that is, again, a mirage, right? Having a bilingual population in a multilingual, multicultural world should no longer be the objective of educational assistance. But the belief is, and this is again globalization, and if you excuse me, a very neoliberal mindset, is that because you have a higher education qualification, you can stand to be a better teacher than if you are not. And we've seen it during the pandemic and prior to the pandemic as well. For those of us who work in resource challenge situations, the creativity of the teachers and teachers coming together and working towards improving the teaching so that their students learn better is so much more effective than in a graduate degree. So that's the main trend that I see in terms of becoming more professional, if you wish, which is a misnomer, because to me, being a professional is being able to do your job well and to promote learning in your learners. The other big trend that I see is that more and more teachers are trying also to explore what else they can learn in terms of computer or technology enhanced or technology mediated teaching. But that, again, is not done, in my opinion, and according to the perspectives that I've seen, for the benefit of the students, but just because in case we have another pandemic, or if I want to advance in my institution, I need to certify this kind of knowledge. One of the reasons that led me to say what we did was just solving the problems of praxis and not professional development. I like to look at the people who are in the first 5 years of the profession of being a teacher, because I think that's the core of the is what makes or breaks a future professional development engaged professional. In those first 5 years, if you are a pretty effective teacher and you can do with the course books you are given, you can teach the syllabus, there is not much interest in pursuing professional development. But it's those teachers in the first 5 years of the profession who feel that they what they got initially did not gel into a competent teaching persona, the ones who start seeking out and looking for alternative ways.
Okay. So if I may summarize, and maybe you can correct me if I misinterpreted you, but I think you pulled out three different areas there in terms of professionalization, in terms of the qualifications that people seek, rightly or wrongly. And secondly, you kind of sandwiched in there the hands-on teacher development in the staff room and so forth. That's the really valuable stuff. And then thirdly, technological self-development and courses appertaining to that. Am I right, those three areas?
Yeah, and everything that has to do with what have been called active methodologies, which in ELT we have used for centuries, right? Like project-based learning or problem-based learning. Look at DOGME and the whole movement towards emergent language and how to work with it. All those are areas that we have known in the profession for some time, but again, are not mainstream. So I see a lot of interest in those areas as well when teachers, particularly working kind of primary or secondary schools, where the whole curriculum is based on this new, what they call new active pedagogies.
Yeah. Interesting that you pulled up emergent language there, because in a future episode we're going to interview Richard Chin and Danny Norrington Davis, but I won't say any more.
Looking forward to reading the book.
Definitely, definitely. So, I mean, that is an emergent error, isn't it, in teacher development?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and dogma for newer teachers keeps coming around again and again because it always feels new, doesn't it? Something like that.
Yeah. You see, that area that Richard and Danny have tackled is such an important area in moving forward our profession, because we are pretty much tied still to a linguistic paradigm which is very structuralist, whereas they are taking language as a complex system that ceases to be an object for teaching or learning. And it becomes actually a living organism that is self-adaptive and emergent. I think if we could tap the potential of this view and we could gather enough adepts, if you wish, with that perspective, more Vygotskian in its approach, more the idea of mediated learning in the sense that Vygotsky intended mediation to be, then we could stand a way of really pushing forward the field.
In fact, that connects to a question I asked them in their workshop at IATEFL on emergent language. And that was, who decides emergent language? Which just goes back to what you're saying, this living organism, and really making that a rich, fruitful bed of development for the teachers, tapping into what the students need themselves. Yeah. Okay. So perhaps you better leave that for a future episode, but certainly a growth area. And what new areas perhaps of teacher development do you foresee in the future? I'm asking you to look into your crystal ball, and we won't quote you on this, I promise.
I think that the use of artificial intelligence in English language teaching, also virtual reality, those are two areas of which we don't know much about, except for what we read in the press. There has not been much research, I mean, empirical research done with real language learners in real language classrooms. We have laboratory studies, which is not the same. But I think these are two areas that are going to impact our field. Similarly to what happened when video hit the classrooms in the 1970s, late 1970s, early 80s, right? It caused a paradigm shift, if you wish, into using more authentic material. Language teaching became multimodal in that sense, because we, for the first time, had access, for example, to proxemics and to body language. So I think that those two areas are areas I would particularly be interested in exploring more about.
That area has been threatening to move forwards for a number of years, hasn't it? Who's going to write the first book on incorporating artificial intelligence in the classroom? It'll be interesting to see. How do you think teachers will need to adapt in the future in terms of teacher development?
I've been very critical of what has happened since the pandemic ended first, because all the money that educational institutions, and I'm generalizing here, of course, but the institutions I have access to, they fed money into professional development because they needed the teachers to be able to use the tools they had at their disposal to better serve their students. But then the first thing that went out of the budgets was the money for professional development. So my whole idea back in 2004, I wrote a book called Teacher-Centered Professional Development that kind of tracks 2 semesters worth of work with teachers in a small school district in the United States. And what happened there was, my idea is that it's true that institutions have an agenda, and you have to respond to that agenda by learning what the institution wants you to learn. But to do your job properly, you also need to develop your own talents and to overcome your own handicaps. And that is the area where I feel institutions are not generally supportive of teachers, with very few exceptions. So I feel that there has to be a crossover between two areas, one of which is not regularly acknowledged in our profession, which is that of teachers as workers. And I don't like to call us workers alone, is working professionals, right? It's more than being unionized. Look at what happened to our field during the pandemic, the number of schools that closed, and the number of people who left the profession, and the number of people who suffered because of this notion that anybody can teach English if you're a native speaker. So why, if we can pay half the price, well, you know the story. So we need teachers who can claim their rightful place in the profession and who act in the way other professions act and demand that their professional development be part of their daily work, be embedded in the work, and not something that we do as an add-on in our free time.
So how do you think we demand that?
I mean, if teachers were paid for only just one extra period a week, and that does not alter budgets significantly in general, just one extra period. And if that extra period were dedicated to teachers getting to do the professional development that they need in small communities of practice, in small groups, even across schools, the situation would be completely different. Now, what in general happens is if we are paid any extra time, it's generally filled up with administrative stuff, right? Professional development days are for people to sit down, grab a bite, listen to the consultant who comes and tells us how to do things, but we never rescue the richness of the institution that we have. I came up in that book with a model which I call the teacher's choice model that basically crosses two variables. How aware are we that our knowledge is updated or not? And the second one is how updated or outdated our knowledge is. And when I say knowledge, I mean all spheres of teacher knowledge. So if you cross the two variables, you end up with four quadrants. One in which you know your knowledge is updated, one in which you don't know that your knowledge is updated. And that is one of the golden nuggets that we have in the profession. Those colleagues who do wonders, and when you ask them, can you tell me how you do it? They say, well, you know, I don't know. So starting a collaborative relationship with a colleague like that, being able to act as to observe that colleague in action, having instructional conversations about teaching and learning. And then there are those of us who know very clearly that our knowledge is outdated. And so that quadrant are the ones who seek professional development, the others don't. And of course, we have colleagues who are unaware that their knowledge is outdated. And they also deserve to be given the chance to pursue their own professional development, to unlearn things and relearn. And in that view, if you look at the richness of those four situations, you don't need any expert coming from outside your institution. You can count on the very effective teacher whose knowledge is updated to do your initial teacher training workshop on the new ideas or whatever. And then you can work supporting the other three kinds of teachers. But the beautiful thing about the model is that we are all in the four quadrants all the time. There is something about our practice that we are unaware that we need to improve, others that we do well. So the idea is getting the teachers to come together and to be able to talk about what they are good at and sharing that collectively.
I think we feel fairly bad at that. You're right. And recognize what we're good at and sharing that.
Absolutely.
Personally, I think I've always felt that I'm outdated, and that's why I'm always running to catch up and learn. The question, I suppose, is when can we rest? And we need to rest sometimes as teachers as well, but it's a never-ending process, isn't it? Development.
Absolutely. But as you say, Christian, when do we rest? Because we do professional development during our rest time, during our free time, right? So if we were embedded in our job, it would be different.
If we can refine it to a few pointers for teachers, perhaps, where should their priorities lie in terms of their teacher development over the next decade or so? I know it depends on the teacher, but maybe a few points there. Where should we focus our energies?
I think the first thing we need to do is to look in before we start looking out, right? And do a thorough assessment of who you are as a teaching professional, what your strengths are, or where your strengths lie, and where your weaknesses lie. And then come together and have honest conversations. I mean, you know, teaching can be a very competitive business, when it's taken as a business, right? And we know that standardized teacher evaluations based on student scores are generally threatening. We have a whole host of situations that impinge on us truly collaborating. I feel the first thing would be to start looking at how effective collaborative organizations work and trying to bring that into the language school or the university or whatever staff room you're part of. And then know where your field is. That is another thing that we need to start reading research more. And we need to call out researchers who have the means and the tools to find things out about what our needs are as teachers, to do research on things that we or our students prompt and not their own ideas that are generally generated in the ivory towers. We know, for example, in IATEFL, the research SIG, I admire them deeply because they are able to establish bridges in between research and the classroom and the researcher and the classroom teacher. But that is not the case in the profession. Teachers do not read research because, in general, either it's very expensive to get subscriptions to quality journals. And secondly, because most research is not really relevant to what the teachers do in the classroom. So that would be another thing to do. And the other thing is to position technology-mediated instruction in its rightful place with all its potential, but also all its disadvantages. Knowing that what we are using is another tool and it shouldn't be reified as technology being the center of attention. No, it's learning and teaching are the center of attention and how they can progress better with the mediation of a digital tool. So I would say those are the three areas that I would tell teachers start gearing your view towards in the horizon and start exploring more systematically.
Super. So many useful ideas. Is there anything else you would like to add there in terms of teacher development? Any advice for teachers, either beginning or mid or even in their latter career?
The first thing is do not consider teacher development as something you need to do because you need to be fixed because you are faulty. Development is what every professional does in any profession. But I know that when we talk about standardized professional development institutions, the idea is, oh, we need to make a new curriculum or reform this because teachers take a lot of the brunt when students don't learn. But when students do learn, we very seldom get the acknowledgments for our efforts. So think of professional development as this career-long process. I always like to use a definition of professional development, which is a process through which you finely tune your teaching so that it best serves your students. And that is the idea. You can augment some things, decrease some other things, but you already have it in you. Now, what you need to do is to just gear it towards the right context in terms of students. And you mentioned Freire at the beginning. Every single course that I teach has a lot of quotes from Freire, but my favorite one, and the one which to me epitomizes what professional development really is a quote from a book he wrote in 1996. It's a little-known book called Letters to Christina, Reflections on My Life and Work, which is a collection of letters he wrote to his niece, Christina, while he was in exile. Christina had remained with her family in Brazil, and the family, of course, had taken the brunt of all the political problems associated with a dictatorship, mostly having an uncle such as Paulo Freire, right? And so she said, "Uncle, who are you? And why are you like this?" Imagine a teenager writing to you like that. And he poured his heart out in that book. It's a beautiful book to read. And in a moment, he says that at the point of encounter, there are neither total ignoramuses nor perfect sages. There are only people trying together, and that's a beautiful word, to know more than what they now know.
To do their best.
Absolutely. And to me, that epitomizes what professional development for teachers should be, right? Nobody is a sage. Nobody is an ignoramus. We all have something to contribute. We all can all learn and teach at the same time.
Yeah, well, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Look forward to the whole series to listen to other people as well. Thank you for contacting me.
Look forward to seeing you again at IOTEFL.
Hopefully, Harrogate in April.
Take care. Thank you so much. Well, I hope you thoroughly enjoyed that. And if you did, then please subscribe to our DevelopPod podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. And then you'll get the regular feed from DevelopPod. And if you'd also like to either comment or even hopefully contribute to the series of DevelopPod on the future of teacher development in English language teaching, then please, please do contact us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or write to us at tdsig.podcast@iotefl.org. You can find that email address on the Teacher Development TDSIG webpage. So I hope we'll be seeing you, or at least some of you, at this year's IOTEFL at Harrogate in April this year, 2023, where the TDSIG is teaming up with the pronunciation SIG, the PRON SIG, for our joint PCE on the 17th of April. And the day is entitled Teacher Development and Pronunciation, Feel the Fear and Teach It Anyway. So looking forward to seeing you soon. Take care. Bye now.